And we are live about 15 minutes later than normal, but right on time, because I could schedule that into this morning as I realized that time was getting away from me. Folks, it's been kind of a whirlwind for the last day and a half. About right after I got done with the show yesterday, I pulled up the Amazon page for my new book, Laws of Life, and saw number one new release. I was like, wow. And I sent it to a few people and said, look what happened. And one of the people I sent it to was Amy, as in Nurse Amy from Bones and Amy. And they've done a lot with Amazon KDP. So they knew where to look for other stats. And she sent it back to me. And we were on the top 10 bestseller list in three categories for both Kindle and print books. We were about number 200-ish in books overall. There's 50 million titles. It kind of blew my head apart. I had a lot of things going on. My wife and I had a dinner because not only was it book day, it was anniversary day for our marriage. And, man, time got away from me, and it's still slipping away. And we continue. We've slipped a little bit because we had that initial surge on launch. We slipped a little bit. We're still top 10 list, top 10 bestseller in three different categories, both Kindle and hard copy books. Thank you guys very much about that. I'll talk a little bit more about it later. But today we're going to be talking about starting a business. And while my book, Laws of Life, isn't directly about starting a business, it is really geared for people who are at least entrepreneurial thinking. And I've got so much of that in my head that I was trying to come up with, like, can we do a show on gardening and just totally divorce from what we talked about the day before? And I can't. One of the beautiful things about running a business of your own is that you can do whatever you decide you want to do that day. But one of the curses is you have to figure out what you're going to do. And I just really can't talk about subject A when my mind is in subject B. And so I am in this mode right now heavily. And so today we're going to talk about finding the business that you want to start, like choosing a business and getting going with it. And I think that'll fit well with a lot of other things that we're doing. And I think this is kind of a universal topic. And the reason is, if you discuss this topic with somebody that already has a business, it's always still beneficial to them because it lets them reassess their own business, tighten things up, come up with new ideas, new service offerings, new marketing messages, etc. So I think it works for both the budding entrepreneur, the seasoned entrepreneur, and that someday maybe I'll be an entrepreneur, right? The person that just wants to think about it. And I think the more exposure you get to things like this, the more likely you are to take the step. Now, what I want to start out with today is that there are very few things that you can do in your life that will give you the liberty and freedom owning your own business will. As I always say, this is not for everyone. And thank God, because if everyone was an entrepreneur, there'd be no workers to do things that entrepreneurs either don't want to do or can't do. And there's certain professions that really don't lend themselves, if you really want to be in your profession, to entrepreneurship. Engineers make great entrepreneurs, but if an engineer wants to do engineering work every day, then it's probably not good that they be an entrepreneur. They might have an entrepreneur mindset in their craft, but they need to be engineering things, not engineering marketing messages and things like that. We all have to make those decisions. And some people want to work in their thing instead of on their business. Or an entrepreneur, that's exactly the opposite. You want to work on your business instead of in your thing. The more time you spend working on your business, the more you optimize the machine to bring in money. So it doesn't just bring in money while you're working. As I said yesterday, it brings in money while you sleep. And I'm not talking about, the scam infomercials from the 90s and early 2000s, make money in your underwear while you sleep or whatever at your kitchen table. But it's just a fact that when you run a business properly, even when you're not actively doing things, people buy stuff and send you money. That's the way a good business. If your business doesn't do that, then it's not a business. You're a contractor. You might have structured your business, right, as a business, as far as how you pay taxes on it and all. And that brings you a lot of advantages, but it's not a business that you own, right? As a contractor, you're basically a employee with greater freedoms in how you do your job, right? Now, if you're a contractor that actually runs a business in that you're out winning jobs, getting clients, et cetera, then you're doing both, right? So it's important that we draw that delineation. But each level of this, like going from employee to contractor, gives you more freedom. And going from contractor to a contractual business owner, a business that operates as a contracting service, gives you more freedom. And going into complete and total entrepreneurship, where you're sitting above the business and working on it, even if you're a solopreneur, that's where you have maximum freedom. Because I'm not going to be like, you know, I can't do this thing today because I have a work order in that I have to fulfill today, or I'm going to lose this contract. I have a flexibility because I'm a true business owner that some business owners wouldn't have. Now, if you put enough people in a business, build enough teams, you could have a business that's more of a product or service delivery business, and you can still work on it and stay out of it at times. Those all work. But if the business does not flow and function without you in it, it's not a business. And that's what we're going to talk about today, is getting into that mode and finding the way into that mode, or finding the in-between that works for you, because I want this to be as universal as possible. Before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is Biltong USA from Anton's Land of Biltong. You get the best biltong I've ever eaten, made by anybody other than myself. I don't know if I'm willing to say that he makes it better than me, because we all like what we make for ourselves the best. If we don't like something about it, we change it or whatever. But it's damn freaking good. So are the dry sausages, like the Dewars and the Calabanasi. But I want you to know something else about Anton. If you shop on his site, you'll find a lot of really cool stuff. And what, like, every once in a while, he throws an extra thing in with my biweekly shipment of biltong and sausages for free, just because he's a nice guy. And he sent me one time, like, the box was big. I'm like, what's all this? It is smoked paprika, smoked salt, and smoked black pepper. I've been using these things, like, a lot since he sent them. And I realized I never told you guys about it. So while you're at Biltong USA and you go to shop, look, there's a lot of other things there, some really cool sea salts and things like that. Different seasonings and flavoring. So check all of that out. If you've never gone by Land of Biltong because you don't want biltong and you make your own, there's other stuff there and you should check it out. Next up today, KnifeKits.com has been with the Survival Podcast as a sponsor since 2010. That's insane. It is 2025. That is 15 years, folks. So if you've ever thought about learning how to make a knife, you want to learn how to build kydex sheaths, leather sheaths, starting with a kit to make a knife, buying raw materials to make knives, buying just raw steel that you're going to forge yourself or whatever, you can do anything with KnifeKits.com. They've been around as a sponsor, it seems like, forever, and as a company, definitely forever. You know you can trust them for quality and service. Check them out today at KnifeKits.com. All right, with that, I do want to say a little bit about our performance with the book yesterday before we get into today's subject, because it's not my victory, it's our victory. You guys really came through for me, and I think I got us off the board, so to say, to where we'll kind of get out into the wild now, meaning that people that never would have found the book will find the book in just random searches on Amazon, because we hit with so much ferocity that now we're in suggested searches. And that, and we are in coexisting listings. So where somebody looks for this book and that book comes up, but we're there with it. And without you guys, that would not have happened. Without the ambassador program and the just flood of orders, that would have happened. If you have not gotten a copy of the book yet, or you know somebody that could benefit from the type of things that I talked about, please consider getting them one as a gift and sending it to them. And we are still kicking ass, but I want to show you just where we were at yesterday, by about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And, you know, it's one thing to hit bestseller lists if you, like, find obscure, weird categories that don't have that much competition. The categories this book legitimately fits in are not thin categories. They're not obscure. These are big authors that we ended up competing with and in some cases beating, or at least being just right under them. So as of yesterday, in the category of personal finance, we were number 6 overall and number 2 in new releases. And again, if you look, these are, again, like we're talking like people like Robert Kiyosaki and Dave Ramsey, Cameron Haynes, in that category. In motivational management and leadership, which again is an extremely tough category. We were the number one new release, again, over Cameron Haynes, over Susie Welch. Susie Welch is Jack Welch's daughter. Again, these are big, high-powered publishers. And even in the overall, we were number seven in the category. Sitting next to people like, Mel Robbins, who pretty much owns some of the categories, like has five of the top 10 books and what have you. Just amazing out-of-the-gate performance. In business motivation, self-improvement, we were number eight overall and number two in new releases. Again, sitting next to Susie Welch, Cameron Haynes. But when we look at the overall, sitting next to Donald Trump, like the sitting president of the United States, to be on a list like that, even for a day, is pretty damn amazing. And thank you all of you who made that happen, because I didn't make it happen. You did. Thank you so much. And I don't think it's a day now. I mean, we're in day two and we're still holding. One of the cool things that I learned from Amy is that just by scrolling down, and I just never noticed this before, you can see how you rank in books overall. There's 50 million copies of books, 50 million titles on Amazon. And as of right now, we are the 227th best-selling book, period, out of 50 million. Now, that's not a top 10 bestseller all across, but man, 200 out of 50 million, I'll take it. I'll take it. Thank you, guys. Really, I just heartfelt thank you in this. Now, a couple of things that happened. One, I've been reached out to by two publishers, both that seem kind of skanky. I don't really know that I'm interested in a publisher, but if Simon Schuster or Random House or somebody reaches out, maybe we'll talk. Right now, I think the independence is a hell of a lot more fun. I mean, that's what today's topic's going to be about. But there's some jackwagon who wrote a workbook overnight, probably with AI, that's the workbook for Jack's Laws of Life. It's bullshit. You shouldn't buy it. It's crap. The guy's a liar. Pascal's some bullshit. I've reported him. We'll see if Amazon does anything about it. If they don't take it down in a day or two, I'm going to unleash the TSPC army, and we are going to fill his ass with one-star reviews to calling him out professionally so they get approved by the Amazon moderation squad. But this is not acceptable. It's not acceptable to do that with somebody's brand, in my opinion. You want to make your own version of it? I don't care, but you put my name on the cover of his book. Fuck him. We're gonna stop that shit. All right, so let's dig into today's topic. Let's start off with something I want you to know. I am now presenting on standalone days from usually one or two sheets of paper, presenter notes that I'm developing, and I'm developing those notes with GPT. Yes, it is on Kindle, Chris. With GPT, and I take these presenter notes to present with, and that way I can delete my other screen fully available so I can look over here on what's going on with Rumble, for instance, and see comments. But I figured since I'm doing that, I'm spinning these as PDFs before I print them out. And so yesterday I did it. I just neglected to tell you. From now on standalone shows, so basically Monday and Tuesdays usually, if you want a copy of my presenter notes from the episode, in the show notes on the audio side, there's a link where you can download the PDF if you want it for any reason, for making your own notes, for continuing on, or something like that. So what type of business should you start, all right? Again, today's focus is entrepreneurship and choosing what kind of business to start. And there's endless options, but the reality is there's only a few core types. And I've always said with design of anything, that within the restrictions of the design begins to show itself. So what I mean by that is if you have a house, no, there is no audiobook in the works. God, I have no idea how to even produce a book for Audible right now, and I don't have time, but maybe we'll do it. But I said this yesterday. I am not a narrator. I know I present well. I mean, I really do. But if I sit down and read my own book, it will sound like a kid in the eighth grade who knows how to read really well, but you can tell that he's reading. Okay? That's how I read if I read out loud. I don't read like I present. So I couldn't do it myself. I'd either have to get a narrator or have an AI analog in my voice do the narration. Okay. Anyway, like what I was saying is, and from now on, if there are any more questions, please put question in all caps. Ask your question, I'll start it, and I'll handle it at the end, and I won't get myself derailed. when you have restrictions, you start to see the design really quick. So what I mean by that is if I take a wide open 1,800 square foot building where there's like high rafters and all, it's a really nice building, but there's no walls. There's no walls. There's no windows. It's just a building, like a giant shed, like a shop building. And I say, you can put a window anywhere you want. I don't care. Here's a saw. You know, make it a house. It's actually kind of hard initially anyway. You almost have to like get a piece of paper and put the outline there and start drawing in a basic floor plan. And then you can look and see, you know, okay, that's where this would go. That's where that would go. Stub some pipe up here, right? Okay. But if I give you a house that already has walls and like countertops and cabinets in the kitchen and things and outlets and different rooms and doors and a hallway and windows, you're like, okay, immediately. You walk in and go, oh, this is like a seating reception area. This is a true living room. This is a kitchen. This is a dining room. There's a hallway here, bedroom, bedroom, bedroom. Other side of the house is probably a big bedroom with big bathroom. Okay, master bedroom. And then, like, you can instantly design it from a standpoint of where the furniture goes. You don't even have to think about it. Like, you look at the living room and you go, well, there's a window there, so I'm not going to put a television in the window. And, you know, there's a fireplace there, so unless I'm going to put it over the fireplace, it's probably going to go there, which means the couch. You see what I mean? As soon as you have the restrictions, everything starts to become clear. So what we have to do is get into what are the primary types of businesses, and then what are the subtypes within them, and then that starts to make, well, what do I want to do really clear? Now, I'm not even talking yet about I want to do a podcast, or I want to do I want to make a blue widget that I have manufactured in Vietnam and drop ship, right? I don't even mean that yet. We're going to go very macro first in the restriction. And once you understand what those restrictions do to you as an entrepreneur, you can start saying to yourself, okay, I don't want this and I don't want that. And those are the restrictions that start to lead you to what you do want. Then we can put the niche in the business. First, we want the what, and then we want the what goes in the what. Okay, does that make sense? If not, it will. What I mean by that is I can take every business on this planet and I can separate it right away into one of two things or a hybrid of the two things, and that's it. And there's nothing else left. And you might be like, Jack, bullshit. Right? There's businesses that are landscaping businesses, and there's businesses that make rockets that go into space, and there's everything in between, and there's a bazillion permeations. But what do they say? We're at the macro. The what before the what goes into the what. And what I mean by that is we have businesses that provide products, and we have businesses that provide services. That's the main delineation point between the two sides. And then we have businesses, of course, that do products and services. If you are a construction company and you make cabinets and you install them, you provide the service of making the cabinet and or the product that is the cabinet and the service that is the installation. So you're a hybrid. If all you do is make cabinets, right, and then people buy them and they ship out of your cabinet factory and somebody else puts them in, they go to Home Depot and people buy them for themselves and install them or hire a contractor to, you are a product business. You might have some service. Every business has some customer service, but it's not a core thing you're selling. You're not billing for it. It's not really a service. You ship the product. That's a service, but you're not, your business is not shipping product. Your business is building product that you ship. That's not a service business, a product business. If you are in a business that doesn't have a product that you ever deliver to a customer, You only provide some level of service, whether it's entertainment or installation. Like if you are a cabinet installer, but you don't make the cabinets, you're not in the cabinet business. You're in the product business. You're in the service business. You might charge overage. You're a little bit of a hybrid, but you're really a product or a service-centric business. If you sell life insurance as an independent life insurance agent and you actually run your agency like a business instead of some thing out of a suitcase and knocking on doors, then you're a service-based business. You don't actually have a product. You provide a service. You're selling the invisible, in the words of Harry Beckwith, I think was the guy that wrote that book, right? That's a service business. So it might be a good idea to start off straight from the beginning, do I want to have something physical to deliver and all of the things that go along with that, good and bad, or do I want to have a service, a soft thing, something that you, even if it is a product, it's really a service and how it functions, because if you have a membership, you're providing a service. There's no real, nothing's deliverable. Even if you're selling something like an ebook that somebody downloads, it's really more service oriented because it's a service of delivering text across. It's very scalable. And that's the real things to look at, right? So the advantages of a true physical product is that when you build a physical product, it is much more difficult for the next person along the line to go, I see what you did, and just copy and emulate your business, right? Service, there's ways to prevent that too. We'll get there in a second. But with a physical product, it has a higher startup cost, so it's hard for somebody to just be a knockoff. It's harder for somebody to claim the same quality as yours. Let's say you make cutting boards is your business. You make very nice, you know, Kobe blocks, which changed their name to Tennessee something. Guy right out of our community builds those, right? And you make those, and you're shipping those. Well, somebody else can make it a beautiful end grain cutting board, but can they really say it's equivalent to yours? And you can always do something with yours to differentiate it. When I look at Les is the guy that owns that company. When I look at one of his boards, I'm like, that's one of his boards. I instantly know it's one of his boards. I just had a discussion with somebody on social media about a video I posted that had nothing to do with this, except in the video was one of his boards. And the guy made a comment on the board and we discussed it. But I'm like, I know exactly who made that board. And it was a really cool TikTok cooking video, right? This guy is awesome. He's called God of Food on TikTok. But I'm like, that's one of Les's boards. So if I can look at that board and say, that's one of Les's boards, it's much more difficult for somebody to compete. On a service, especially like electronic deliverable, where it's not like I am personally taking care of you, that's very easy to emulate what you're doing, like an ebook, literally copy and paste and rip you off. It happens. But your service actually should be your differentiator, even if you're in a product business, in that when we deal with this company, we know what we're going to get. Think about some of the electronic brands that are over and over listed at tspaz.com. E-Tech City, right, and Anchor. Why do I recommend those two so strongly? Yes, they're good products. They have great price-to-value ratios. But when you're making millions of thermal guns or millions of pop-up lanterns or millions of sets of Bluetooth headphones, you are going to get some lemons. Everybody does. I don't care if it's $300 Beats, $150 AirPods, or $45 Anchors. All of them will have the occasional product that shows up and it's dog shit. E-Tech City and Anchor, what they differentiate themselves isn't on the product. There's a lot of product that looks just like what they sell. Probably made in the same place. They differentiate themselves. Anchor's like this. Oh, you got a bad product. Our bad. Here's a new one. Like, we're not even, don't worry about it. Just here's a new one. Here, just take it. E-Tech City, same. E-Tech City, I actually emailed them about some of the negative reviews about their lanterns, and they're like, you know, we sell like a million of these a month. Yeah, there's going to be some that get damaged in shipping, or we just replace it. Like, done. I don't need any other explanation. That's a service differentiator. And so you want to build that in your business, even if you're a product business. But you have to think about, again, just, do I want to be in the product business? Do I want to be in the service business? Or do I want to be a hybrid? Now, within each of them, now we can break those down. And as we go into products, we basically have only two kinds of products, right? Because when we do have a deliverable, technically it is a product. So if you had a website, and I don't think this is going to be enough to make a living on, just so you know. But if you had a website and all it was is like 50 really awesome ebooks, that was your whole business. Are you in a product business or a service business? On some level, you are in a product business. Because you are delivering a thing that's what the customer is actually paying for. That puts us in a realm where we can then break products into only two spaces, physical and non-physical, weighted and weightless. If I have a product that has any weight to it at all, has any gravity effect, right, then it has to go to the customer in only a couple ways. I have to physically deliver it locally. The customer must come to where I sell it from and pick it up, or it must go through some form of mail or delivery service like UPS or FedEx or something like that, right? That has to go there. A non-physical product is weightless. It's like a Bitcoin. I can send it to you. So is my MSB a service business or is it a product business? It's a billion times scalable. If 200,000 people joined it tomorrow, it would work. I don't have to do anything. It'll just keep working, right? We might have to upgrade something on the server for more traffic. That would be about it. I don't even think that wouldn't even hit us though. It's such a light load on the server versus, you know, delivering the show to hundreds of thousands of people every day as an audio file. That's a much bigger load on our server than people logging in whenever they want a discount. But it's kind of a weightless product business. So I get the power of the product without the headache of the shipping. And again, Harry Beckwith, I'm pretty sure, was the guy that wrote the book Selling the Invisible. He wrote that book for people that are like insurance salesmen, right? And not necessarily, hey, I want to talk to you about life insurance, but people that might be actually working high-level business insurance products and things like that. Or anything that when you're done and you leave, the customer doesn't have anything they can touch. Yeah, is it a product or a service? Again, it depends. But again, if it is a product, it's either physical or non-physical, or it's nothing. It's not real. It doesn't exist. It's not a product. So now you can start to think, do I want to be in a product business with a weighted product? Do I want to be in a product business with a weightless product that can be delivered across the intranet, right? And just woof, and it's out and it's gone. Or do I want to do both? Because maybe you want to do both, because what can be really powerful is a physical product that is bonused with a non-physical product, because then I can put lots of bonuses with physical products, can't I? It gives me a lot of power. We move into services. There's three. At the macro, there's lots of things within each category, but there's only three service type business. There's functional services. These are my own terms, by the way. You won't find them in anybody's textbook, I don't think, anyway. Functional includes like accounting, mechanical, design, etc. These are functional. They perform some function. There's educational, teaching, coaching, information products. And then you have entertainment, podcasts, videos, live stream music. That's it. Now, again, you can come up with more inside functional, educational, and entertainment, but that's all there is. And some of you that are listening to this right now, you might be thinking like, so when's you going to tell me what business is starting? You're missing it if you're not understanding what I'm talking about right now. So I'm going to just kind of pull you in a little bit here. This analysis will give you a very clear path if you don't clutter it with the niche and the product itself or the branding itself first. If you come at this from what do I actually want to do? Now, if you already have a product, some people maybe you're already making food and you're selling it or something, or sauces or something. Okay, then you already kind of have that. But then you can start to take the product and back it in here and understand what it really is. This is going to make growing and scaling your business so much easier. Or some of you, it may lead you to go, shit, the way I'm running my business right now, it can't scale. I talk to people all the time, and I'm like, well, here's what you need to do. And they're like, well, if that worked, I wouldn't be able to deliver my product. I couldn't do it. I couldn't keep up. Well, then you either need to lock in on the fact that you're only ever going to be this big, and if you're okay with that, that's fine, or you need to fix the scaling problem, or maybe you need to do something wildly different so you can scale. You may need to change the product or the service or the offering. If a person was doing really amazing food but never was going to be able to grow beyond a certain point, right? Like they don't want to even be in like small regional grocery stores or something like that, right? Like I can't do that. I want to sell out of my house, standard cottage food. You know, what is it, $50,000 a year you can make on that. On gross sales, you probably could cheat a bit, but, you know, you can only go so far. Well, that person might be able to scale by making really awesome cookbooks. Right? Or that person may be able to scale by reaching out to some food vendor with personally curated delivered meals to be prepared at home. So instead of you making the meal, you would basically do a service that somebody else is providing the product for. I can't even think of what they're called now, but there's those services where like once every 2 weeks a box comes with, and there's two pre-made meals in it. You might be actually able to figure out how to do way better than what those people do, because we tried it for fun and we tried two different ones. I think one was Blue Apron and I don't remember the other one. They sucked. And you can't just keep sending people arugula leaves and a lemon and calling it salad over and over and over, guys, if you're in that business. And the arugula that gets to you should be fresh, not yellow. Right? That's part of why they sucked, right? But there's a lot of different ways you could scale that particular business. But it's going to come down to the service is either functional, educational, or entertainment. Functional, again, accounting, mechanical design, education, teaching, coaching, info products, entertainment, podcasts, videos, live streams, music, something like that. Now, you can get into blended offerings. Some people have like a service and product business, like a downloadable course. So you might have a course that you download, but it's also instructor-led. So there's a product that gets delivered, but then there's a service that gets delivered as well. But that would also then, how would that function as we move back into the service side? Well, it would be a educational service, and it would be a non-physical electronic product. Again, I know this might seem a little bit college-like or something, a little bit tedious, but this is actually really important. Because when you try to define your business and explain your business, this is the base of how you'll come up with the actual marketing message of what you do. The AI course, we'll talk a little bit about that at the end. When you take that, if you do, you're going to realize there's a whole lot of forcing you to define what you do. And when I was a consultant, I always found that clients didn't really like this, because the real reason was when you started talking to them and asking them questions, they started to feel like they were being grilled by a detective, because it became really clear right away that even though they thought they knew what they did, they didn't know what they did. And if you're a good consultant, you keep picking at that because they do know what they do, but they don't know how to explain what they do. So eventually you're leading them to that, but sometimes that's uncomfortable for a client. It's one of the harder things of doing your consulting. And this is a huge part of how I consulted when I used to be a consultant. Then we can go down within our blended offerings. This is going to affect how you market, sell, and deliver and support and upsell. And what I mean by that is, if you have non-physical weightless products, then it's real easy to do something like set up a sales funnel that sells a product that's fairly expensive. And if the customer decides they don't want it as they're trying to reject it, you offer them something else, or you package four things together and the customer is in the order process and they're like, wait a minute, I don't want to spend $200 today. And they're like, they're going to bail. Well, wait, what if we just offered you the one product for $50? That is a strategy, but it's only going to work if you're in the right macro. Some places that's not going to be a very strong way to do business. It also changes as you're doing the blended offerings and which way, where you spend most of your time. If you're selling a physical product that's well made and designed and easy to understand, and you've done good documentation with every assembly or whatever, when the customer gets it, then basically they just do it, you will not spend a lot of time working in support, right? Support will be, I didn't get my product, here's the tracking number. Right? That is most of your support handled right there. If you are in something that's service centric, then the entire service is a series of supports throughout the process. When you're in a service oriented business, customers want to constantly be made aware of progress and where you're at. And this is like a place where, here's a perfect example of businesses that could benefit from this analysis. Let's say you are a kitchen remodeling contractor. Well, you think, hell, the customer knows exactly where we are. Look, we took the cabinets down yesterday. We ripped out the flooring, whatever. Okay. If you're not a clown and you're in that business, you're running a Gantt chart, which is telling you as a project manager whether or not that job is still above the water from a budgetary standpoint. That you, it's tracking things like your man hours and your percentage of being done, et cetera. Now, if that contractor were every day at the end of that job, if they had built a template that made a customer output that said, we are 10% done with the job based on this estimate, we are on track to meet our commitment to you and be done at 2 weeks. And the next day it said, we are now at 17%. We're a little bit behind. It looks like it would take one extra day. And they got that from you every day, and you ended up going 4 days over on your production. You may not be happy because of the man hours you burned, or you may have pulled off to do something else because you had to, because you have a supply chain issue. But you know what that customer is like? You know what? I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. When you keep telling that customer every fucking day, oh, we'll be done on time. Oh, we'll be done on time. And 2 days before you're supposed to be done, it's obvious to everybody involved that it's not going to happen. And you fucking knew it all the way through. You know what they feel like? They feel the exact same way. Oh, they're a lot more pissed off about it because a lot more money's involved. When you walk into a restaurant, they seat you at a table and they're really busy, but nobody even gets your drink order or says, I'm sorry for the wait. You're fucking pissed, right? But if when you are sat down immediately, somebody says, I can't get your drink order yet. Here's two waters. We're really behind today. I'm sorry. I'll be with you as quick as we can. You're like, okay, I get it. I understand. Right. And as long as you're actually busy, you're like, okay. And when they come back to you and say, I'm sorry for the wait, you say what? It's okay. I would like a margarita. And what are your specials or whatever? But when you're ignored, you're like, fuck these people. Like, I've been at restaurants like that. And after about 10 minutes, I'm like, yeah, fuck this. And we leave. Like, if I'm not important enough for you to tell me where we're at, then you're not important enough for me to be your customer. This is how you have to analyze when you get into this. Where should most of your time go, or where does some of your time have to go? Now, physical products challenges. Like, let's get into that now. What are the challenges of a physical product? Well, they add complexity, manufacturing, packaging, and inventory, unless you can find a way to offload that. For instance, we sell T-shirts. This is not one of my T-shirts, one of Joel Ryle's T-shirts, but we sell T-shirts in the Survival Podcast swag shop, tspswag.com. We have some pretty cool shirts and hats and some other stuff that you can get there. But we use a print-on-demand service. This means that we have to sell a shirt for more money than if we printed a run and then sold inventory. But what does it save us? It saves us, well, extra small, small, medium, large, pink, black, white, yellow, female cut, male cut, long sleeve, short sleeve. Like, as soon as you go into a product business like that, well, can I get one in a girl cut, right? Can I get one that's pink? Can I, you know, it maybe it works in that color, maybe it doesn't with the design on it. But with print on demand, we can just set up what does work, and what you buy, and what you don't buy, we don't print it. So it's no big deal. There's some things you can do that with and some things you can't. If you want to just start to understand the complexity of running a product-based business where you make the product or buy it from somebody for resale and you have to keep it in inventory, do T-shirts in your head. Okay, you're going to do one T-shirt, the one that I'm wearing right here as far as the design. Joel's dog on the thing, and then you got the thing on the sleeve, right? And you got the print that's on the back. That's it. It's the only design you're going to do. But you need to have enough to ship orders as they come in. How many shirts are you going to make if you're going to have them in inventory? Well, again, you need small, medium, large, and extra large. Now add a color choice. These come in black and silver. Okay, now how many shirts are you going to print? Oh, but again, you have people in your audience who are female, and they want the cut of a female shirt. When it looks really good on a woman, is generally a little bit different. So now you need small, medium, large, extra large in female cut. Maybe they want a V-neck. I don't know. You start to see how quickly all these options add up. And that's why a lot of companies are in the product of business. Like, one of the companies I used to work for was in the hardware, computer hardware business. And we built computer hardware for, like, major carriers like Celex and companies like Alcatel and Santerra Systems. PathNet would actually buy our products and build them into their larger systems that went into central offices. And we had one switch set called the 4K switch set that we would brag. It's configurable in over 20,000 options, and we weren't bullshitting. That was power supplies. It could be neg 48 volt for the carriers. It could be other DC requirements for certain OEMs. It could be AC. It could be AC for American or European systems. Like, there was, and then it could have, you know, a certain number of Ethernet switches, a certain number of optical switches, and all of it was modular. So it was really about 50 pieces that made 20,000 configurations. That was an adaptation to the limit. Like, we can't possibly have sitting in inventory, you know, even 40 different popular configurations, but we can modularize to be able to basically an order comes in and we had tech sitting in a bench and they would just slap it together. And literally, I use the word tech very loosely. This is not board spinning or anything. This is something anybody could do. If you can build Legos, you could have put one of those switches together. Maybe a little harder or a little easier, depending on how you look at it. I mean, obviously grounding bracelets so you don't static pop something or whatever, but it was pretty damn easy to do. There's also a time and labor component to physical products that you have to factor into it. And there's nothing more expensive to you as a business owner than the labor you have to pay for. Because the labor you have to pay for comes with all kinds of other fucking expenses and problems. People get drunk and don't come to work. People get drunk and do come to work, which is sometimes worse because you're paying them to be unproductive. Like, people get sick. People get bitchy. People have children. People have problems. People have emergencies. I'm not saying you're wrong if you're an employee for those things, but as your employer, I have to deal with that economically. You know, employees sometimes are quietly quitting, meaning they're just doing just enough work not to get fired. You have to identify that and get rid of those people. Like, it's a major expense and a major pain in the ass. That's why I love the solopreneur thing. Or if you're going to build a team, you want to build a team into a commoditized labor force. And what I mean by that is, let's say that I went into business and my business was developing premium WordPress plugins. That's not a bad business. Like, and what that means, though, is how many people can write PHP and MySQL code? Which is what most of the WordPress plugins run. Billions, literally. Like, billions is probably millions, okay? And I can get somebody to do that, and if somebody's failing on that, as long as I ensure that there's good documentation with the development, I can just swap coders out, right? If I have something really specialized and it's not a commoditized labor thing, if it takes me 6 months to train an employee, I have a major investment in them, right? See, so with, like, if you look at something like a big organization that has mastered commoditizing specialization, the U.S. military, just say the Army, right? So the Army can say, we need a third shop level vehicle mechanic at Fort Leonard Wood. They could pick anybody under whatever the MOS is today. That would have been a 63 whiskey back when I was in. And they can take any 63 whiskey that's of, let's say, if they need somebody that's at least experienced enough to be a specialist for any specialist for 63 whiskey, they can just pick them up and transfer them over there. Boom. But you don't have that budget. And that's actually a specialized skill base, right? So you have, if you're going to take that approach and you want it to be easy, you need to take something. There's enough body count of people that can do that shit. And they need very limited training, maybe training only in your proprietary things. And you want to document things. You want an SOP that when they come in the door, you can go, here, I know that you've done this before, and I know you have your way, but this is our way. You need to adapt yourself to our way. And you can put them to work for a day and go, you know what? You're not going to work out. Get out of here, Skippy. Or you can go, you know what? You're going to be fine. Here's a few things to tighten up on. And within a week, they're rolling. If you're not scaling that way in this type of a business, you're going to have problems. You're going to have problems. You can also be a physical product business that's really a service business. So how did that work? Well, that would be that you basically are a reseller of product, and all you're doing is taking orders and moving things around and taking a skim part off the top, right? If you're doing that, you're really in the service business, even though somebody's delivering a product, it's just not you. And the problem with the fact that the guy that's supposed to weld the thing together got drunk last night and did crappy work, that's your supplier's problem, not yours. You just have to deal with the service issue of this product's going to be a day late. Right? Or this product was fabricated incorrectly. I'm going to take care of it for you. And you go back and beat your supplier up. All of these things blend together. You have to figure out how you want to be before you start building, or you might build yourself into a box that you hate. That's why we're taking this approach. Now, the next thing is we need to know whether this is a physical product, a service product, a weighted product, a weightless product, whatever it is. It's a video, it's a widget, it's whatever. Why do people buy products? There's only two reasons. See, and I love to do this. And I love to, I actually, even though we're doing this live, it's not like doing it like on a stage or something or in a hotel room. I love doing it in that environment because I can see your faces. When I say that, there's always this this look like maybe somebody just sat on some tacks or they're crapping their pants or something, like unhappy, miserable look as their brain tries to grapple with me saying something like that. There's only two reasons people buy a product, no matter what kind of product it is. Because it seems like that's complete bullshit. I bought a car because I needed transportation. I bought a toothbrush because I don't want my teeth to rot out. I bought a comb to fix my freaking hair. No. You either bought a product because you needed it or you wanted it. That's it. There's nothing else. You needed to have it. Well, maybe I brought a product because government made me. I didn't want it, and I don't think I need it. No, you needed it because you had to comply with regulations. That's what was a need. And the reason this one is so important is because of how people do things, which it seems very counterintuitive, but when I explain it, you'll understand it's exactly what people do. So you would think that the first thing people would cut spending on is wants, not needs. It's exactly wrong. Person loses a job, first thing they do, I gotta cut some expenses around here, and they start looking at things like their electric bill and does my state have competition? Is there a lower cost electrical provider? Electricity is pretty much a need in 2025, right? Can I get a better deal on my cell phone? That's a need, and at least in people's minds. I need this. The first place they look to cut their cost is in all the things they perceive that they need. I'll start buying the store brand versus the name brand at the grocery store of this particular product or what have you. Food is a need. So they'll cut that. They'll go to a lower quality meat. I'm not going to buy, you know, usually we eat 3 steaks a week. Meat's gotten really high. We'll eat 2 steaks a week and we'll replace one of the meals with chicken or pork or ground beef instead of steak. You see what I'm saying? That's like first place people go. And there's a little bit of logic there, right? There's a little bit of logic there because the things that you need tend to be a primary piece of your budget, so we have to cut the needs. It's like we are doing the opposite of what government does, right? Government, like, we're going to cut stuff. So they cut they cut bullshit by having it grow less and call it a cut. But they never want to touch, you know, what they refer to as entitlements, like Medicaid and Social Security and the military. Well, that's where all the money is. That's where all the money is. But the poor people on Medicaid. Yeah, there's about 1 million people on Medicaid right now that shouldn't be on it, that don't qualify to be on it. When you hear them saying that the Republicans want to cut all these people off Medicaid, yeah, they're people that do not qualify for the fucking program. Under the terms of the program, they're committing fraud, right? But they don't want to go there. We kind of do the opposite, where we do realize my electric bill, all of my shit, like maybe I can get a better mortgage rate. Maybe rates have dropped since I bought my house. Maybe I can refinance. Maybe I've been paying for 10 years and I can get a lower rate and refinance my house back to 30 years. Like, and that'll cut my house payment. Okay, great. You're trying to balance your budget by restricting your spending. But the other side of that is, this is where the big boys are. If you go into the food business strictly as a, I'm selling food because people have to eat business, you're competing with all the national brands, Nestle, Frito-Lay, et cetera, right? And you're competing with Kroger's and Albertsons and Winn-Dixie and whoever the hell else, Publix, okay? They can kill you. They will murder you. You can never sell at the price that they can sell. So that's the problem with a need. You pretty much don't want to sell a need unless you're selling a need based on a want. In other words, person needs food, but what they want is a gluten-free organic macadamia cookie. I don't know what, but that is selling a want. Because the same person that will go to Kroger's and buy the Kroger brand, the Select brand, whatever, instead of the name brand when they decide they have to cut their spending because their paycheck went down or prices went up or whatever, is still going to go to Starbucks and buy a $5 fucking cookie. They're still going to go out and buy a custom surfboard. They're still going to go to a rock concert that they can't really afford. People will justify their wants. That's the business you want to be in, is in the wants business. And even if you're in the need business, you want to sell the want component of the need, right? You want to sell that your beef is cleaner, that it's fresher, that it was grown locally. You're not competing. with, you know, a piece of steak sitting in cellophane wrapper at Kroger's in the cooler. You don't even want to talk about that. If the customer says, well, this kind of seems like it's as expensive as the supermarket's got nothing on this, man. Like, the cow lived right there. It ate grass right there. It never went to a CAFO. It's never been injected with any bullshit. You're selling the, and if that customer doesn't want that, all you're looking for is a different customer. You're not changing your offering to meet the customer doesn't want what you have. If you have a good product, a good service, and a good ability to market to the actual wants, and there's enough market there, you need to, like, identify prospective customers as being the wrong customer as quickly as you fucking can, and just get them away, right? And there's only one or two things that's going to happen when you say, I don't think you should be our customer. Either you and the customer are both going to realize that you're absolutely correct, and that customer is going to go away and never come back. And that's the best outcome possible, except for the second one, okay? And the reason it's a great outcome is because now they're not in your way. You need to be talking to another customer, whether it's through an email, whether it's face-to-face, whether it's on a sales call. I don't care what it is. You need to spend as little time as possible speaking to potential customers who are actually not potential customers. In other words, people that are in the never going to buy, at least right now, category. Filter that in a way. And when you filter them away, they need to go in one of two buckets. One, file 13. Some of you older fucks know what that means, right? File 13 is the garbage can. In other words, like, this is just a throwaway. There's no way this person ever will qualify as a customer. Or they can go in the B bucket. The B bucket is light, gentle follow-up. This person may someday come back around and be a good customer. You have to filter that quick and get moving so that you can spend time talking to the people that actually qualify. So that's kind of wrapped up the needs and the wants, but that's it. And you want to sell to the want, even if you're in the needs business. Now, what motivates the want purchase then? Now, you might think, again, well, lots of things. No, three. You'll see I like to work in absolute definitions and then groups of either two or three. And if you can't get something down to two or three, you probably haven't tried hard enough yet. You're probably kidding yourself. So what motivates the want purchase? There's only three things: entertainment, profit, or life-changing outcome. That's it. There's nothing else. You know, well, I bought it because I liked it. Entertainment. Well, I bought it because I wanted to know how to make that macadamia nut cookie, and I found out how to make that macadamia nut cookie, and I can make it. I didn't profit. Yes, you did. You have knowledge now that you didn't have. You offered money. You got something in return. You felt the value of the information exceeded the value of the money that you tendered, and you turned a profit instantly. And now when you make that cookie for 50 cents that you would have paid $5 for at Starbucks, you continue to profit for as long as you do it, right? Life-changing outcome is when you take a sales course and you learn how to sell better, and your entire income bracket goes up one because you had a life-changing and a profitable. See, most businesses have at least two. Most businesses, products, and services have at least two of these. Entertainment. Hopefully, when you tune into the Survival Podcast, it's not just education, which is profit, okay? Hopefully, I'm a little entertaining. Hopefully, I'm a little charismatic. Hopefully, once or twice during an episode, I make you laugh. Or I make you feel better because you were angry about something and now you're less angry about it. Or you feel that your anger is justified. So now that, you know, somebody shares your anger, you feel better. All of those things are entertainment value. And again, life-changing outcome, that means that for some reason, when you came across this company, service, brand, whatever, at least over time, it literally changed your life. Now, the golden trifecta of product marketing, I call this the golden trifecta of marketing, whether it's product or service. And that is, if you have a product that is entertaining, profitable, and life-changing, then you have something that's infinitely scalable, it's infinitely marketable, you have no limit on the number of customers you can find. Now, not everybody will qualify, but you'll never have what you would call market saturation, ever, if you actually can deliver a product like that. I would submit to you the Survival Podcast as a business as a whole has the trifecta. And I would submit to you that it has the trifecta because the analysis that we've been doing now for 50 minutes that you might have found tedious was what I used when I built a podcast. I'm not bragging here, okay? I'm just laying the groundwork for how this works with building a business. I've been running a podcast for 17 years as of June. So we're less than a month away. No, we're a month and 7 days away from 17 years of this podcast. For 16 of those 17 years, I've made an income off this podcast that is sufficient to pay all my bills and live a really great life. Do you know what percentage of podcasts have been run for even 10 years that the host is able to make a living from doing the show alone? The answer is it's less than 1%. Less than 1%. I would bet that there's a dozen that are more than 10 years old that's true of. Like, you might think they're doing it, but when you really look at their business, like if you look at somebody like Mark Moss, most of his money is not made with what he's doing as a content creator. Most of his money is made with the things that he's talking about that he does on the other side of things with investing and money management and things like that and business startups. Like, people that actually make a living from podcasting, it's a very rare thing. I think it's infinitely doable, but that's what it takes. And I would submit to you that we are entertaining, at least at times. If I was boring, you wouldn't tune in. So almost every podcaster has to be at least somewhat entertaining. I think we are profitable. I think the Bitcoin advice I've given since 2013 alone, if that's not profitable, I don't know what is. But even our products are a profit-orientated business. Many of you buy MSB just to support me. Thank you, but I wish you'd use the benefits. So if you buy my Member Support Brigade membership, then what ends up happening is you look in there and you go, oh shit, I need to order some mushroom spawn, 10% off at Mushroom Mountain. And you order $100 worth of shit and that's 10 bucks off. And then you're like, oh, I use cannabis products. I'm going to go to Akira Botanicals today. I'm going to order like $200 worth of stuff. I get 25%. That's $50. Now I'm at 60 bucks. Two uses. What's the product cost? 50 bucks. I just profited $10. It's early in the year. I have another year of this to go. That's profitable. That's another form of profit that we try to deliver. When we do our courses, when we sell things at like Home Food Systems, a composting course and stuff like that, that's an educational product, but it is a profit-driven motive. You want the knowledge. And I'm giving you, hopefully, in my view, like the compost course, I think I'm giving you about $1,000 worth of knowledge. And I'm giving it to you for 40 bucks. That's a pretty good profit. That's how I market it because that's what it is. And then life-changing. Well, I know it changes lives. The total package changes lives because I get three or four emails a week that make me almost cry hearing the transformational stories. I know that we do shows like this on building a business once in a while, but we're not a how to build a business show. It's not what we are. We don't even really compete in that space. It's like just one of my passionate things that I think helps with preparedness and lifestyle design. And yet, I would submit to you, we probably have spawned more businesses that are successful that people are either making a good side income with or a full-time income with than most shows on business development because it was built cohesively. I decided from the very beginning, I mean, I'm like a weekend of just playing with a recorder in my car, going, I think there's something here. Okay, now I need, you know what there is. I need to take this seriously. I need to design this. And I was looking at this exact outline right here, okay, before we really became what we are. And I built it off this outline. You can have this outline for free today. All you do is use the link in the video notes if you're watching the video live or in real, you know, later time, and you can go get this printout. You can have it. It's free. It's profitable, right? And if you use it, it's life-changing. That's what I'm trying to get across to you guys today, that's what you should try to build, especially as a content creator. You know, if you like, we had a guy on recently, and he's done pretty well since he's been on with a lot of you guys reaching out that are in the construction business that sells like parts for construction equipment, excavators, bobcats, stuff like that. He's not going to be life changing, but he is profitable to the customer. You can be one. And if you are a product business with somebody's really like, I need it now, and I need it not to cost any more than this, they don't give a fuck if you are entertaining or life-changing. And that's okay. And you can make a lot of money in a business like that. But the more you're interacting with a customer, the more you need these to come together, okay? Then you need to understand your customer. And I, threes again, man. Threes are powerful. Threes are the way to drill down only what's necessary. This is what you have to know about your customer to be successful in a business. This is it. Who are they? What do they want? How do they want it? So when I say, who are they? Well, they're people. Well, what people? Right? Who are my people? My people are a mix of male and female. The age demographic is about 15 to about 70 on average, with the core being 25 to 55. I know this. I don't think this. I know this because I have enough web analytics after 17 years to know this. Okay, and my demographic is aging because some of my core people, you know, started out when they were 30, and the person that was 30 when they started listening to the podcast is now, if they're still here, is now freaking 47. See how that works? But I know who you are. I know that you're primarily living in America, though I have listeners all around the world, and I thank you for tuning in. I know that 94% of my audience is domestic, United States, Canada. And 98% of my audience is in either the United States, Canada, or other English-speaking countries like Australia or Ireland or the UK. I know that. I don't think that. I know that. And I have some people like in Singapore and Japan and whatever, but I also know that most of those are U.S. expats or they're military or they're contractors and they're actually Americans. So I know exactly who I'm talking to. I know what they want. They want lifestyle design preparedness. That's what they want. That's the primary thing they want. They care about liberty in their own life. They care about freedom. That's what they care about. They by and large want things that make them better people. They want to be better fathers or mothers. They want to be better spouses. Tell me I'm not talking about you right now. The last time I did this show was like 7 years ago, and there were people saying it was like you were in my house looking over my freaking shoulder. It was creepy. But this is the analysis you have to do to understand your customer. What do they want? Well, what they want also, though, comes down to how do they want it? Well, if you listen to a podcast, you want audio content that improves your life in some way. That's what you want. Now, you the specifics to that, again, liberty, self-sufficiency, independence, right? Like, these are the pillars we built the show on. So I knew that's what you want, but the way you wanted it was delivered to you in an easy way, daily, lightweight, push a button and hear. Later, we expanded into doing video, right? Like, we really didn't do video till about 5 years ago, heavily, like every show being a video. But I would still say the majority of people that even tune into YouTube are more likely. I'm on a tab. How many of you right now will just switch tabs so you can say, it's me, you caught me red-handed. You have a different browser tab up. You're not really watching the video. You're multitasking. You're doing something. Maybe you're working, right? But you're also listening to me. Just put me, if that's what you were doing, switch over or what have you. Or you're listening on YouTube live, but you're on your phone. You've got your earpiece in, and you're doing something else somewhere else. You're in the gym, and you're listening even though it's live. But you're not really watching the video. You're driving in your car and you're listening with it connected, right? Hayes Review says I'm building some drawers, right? Like, I know that audio is powerful, and that's how the primary thing that's important is to my audience is less video and more audio. And audio is an incredibly powerful form of marketing, guys. Because I have said this so many times, but I'll never stop saying it because it's so important. It is the only form of marketing that somebody can truly multitask while consuming. You can't truly multitask and watch something with intent that is a video. You can't do it. You have to focus your eyes and your ears at the same time. You can't read and really do something else. Maybe you can be on a treadmill and read. That's about it. But you can't drive a car. You can't be outside mowing the lawn and reading, right? And this is why so many people ask me for the book and audio content. Because, for instance, this weekend, I mowed up my 3-acre property from one end to the other. And the entire time I did it, I had a set of Anchor Q20 headphones over the ears because that way I can actually hear. And I listened to Saifedean Anonymous. However you say his name, Saifedean's, the Bitcoin Standard, while I mowed my property. because I could mow my property and I could listen. Now, I've got to do things like make sure I don't hit a stump, I don't hit a rock, I don't run over a duck, I don't run over a cat, I don't run over a dog, I don't go in a ditch because I got a big ditch on my outside where I have to go outside and mow by the road. Right? There's all these things I have to focus on. I can't be sitting there reading his book on Kindle while I'm, you know, driving my tractor safely, but I can listen. And so I developed that list. Who are you? What do you want? And how do you want it? And then I built the show on that, backing in the product trifecta of entertaining, profitable, life-changing. That was before we really spread our wings. That was before I came up with show formatting. That's before I thought about, well, what am I going to do next week for a topic? I did all that first. Now, the next thing you got to do is analyze yourself. This is hard for people. And you ask yourself a series of questions. And I won't give you answers to these because only you can answer them. I'm getting tons of people coming in. Me. Jesse says, me, building walls in the garage. Homestead glamour life, half watching while I eat lunch and look at local boards. Chargard, I'm folding laundry. Patriot 1774, working on a solar install with my phone sitting by the side. You see what I'm saying? Like, I know who you are. I know who you are. Even those of you that I don't know your screen name or whatever, I know who you are. Dowie Farms is delivering microgreens. I actually know who he really is. Letty Lou, I'm looking for party favors for my kid's birthday. If I, the book is powerful, great, yeah, but you're not reading my book while you're doing that stuff. You're not watching a video while you're doing that stuff, right? So understand those answers. Even if you're not doing a podcast, understand that's the key. Who are they? What do they want? How do they want it? And be very precise in that, because then you can build it exactly for who they are, what they want, and how they want it. And you can also decide other people want it in a different way and they want different things. I don't do that, and that's back to your filter. You go in the File 13 bucket, or you go in the Not Right Now bucket, and I'm going to work on the converting leads that actually are in the right bucket. They're high probability conversion. So now you got to understand yourself, is you're going to pick your business, right? What are you good at? What are you good at right now? Like, if you had no job and you had no way to start a business right now, and you had to walk around and just anybody you saw on the street say, I need work. Here are the things that I can do. And let's leave out things like sacking groceries, right? Like, what can you do really well? Are you a good gunsmith? Are you good with small engines? Are you a good computer coder? Are you a good troubleshooter? Are you a good mechanic? Are you a good salesperson? Are you good at marketing? What are you actually really good at? Okay. And then what do you, John Dowie says he's good at being angry. Yeah. Anybody that hates Christmas just is good at being angry, freaking Grinch. Anyway, what are you good at? Then what do you love doing? What do you love doing? What do you, when you're doing a thing and time melts away, and you look up and you've been doing it for 6 hours and you can't believe what time it is. What are you doing when that happens? Because I'm telling you right now, that's something you love. And that does not mean playing video games unless you're so good that you can make a living playing video games. And if you can do that, go do it. I don't care. But what do you do that is productive or could become productive that you lose yourself in it? And if you had to do it every day for the next 10 years, you would never bitch. You might eventually, but right now you feel like you wouldn't. That's what you love. Then you have to, what do you hate doing? What do you hate more than anything else doing, right? What are you like, damn it, I don't ever want to do this again. Dowie says he loves fishing. There's a lot of money to be made in that industry, Dowie. I'm just saying. But what do you hate? You know, when you define what you hate, one thing it will do is help you figure out what businesses maybe you don't want to touch, or I want to do this business, but this business has a component in it that I hate. And so you're either going to have to do one of two things. You're going to have to develop this disciplinary law of Jack's life, not in the current book, but might be in the future, which is do what you hate first and do it like you love it. That's discipline, right? That's good, straight up discipline. I don't like this thing, but it needs to be done for my business to function, so I'll do it first every day or every day that it needs to be done. It will go to the top of the list, and then it's a downhill run after that. Or you have to go into the business going, this business has a component in it that is taking products off a shelf, putting them in a box, folding it up, taping them shut, putting a label on it and mailing it. And I fucking hate that. Even if you love making the thing that goes in the box, I fucking hate that. I fucking hate it so much, I don't ever want to do it. And you know what you have to do then? It's a transitional mode that you have to design into the business. Then you have to go do that, even though you hate it, and you take yesterday's orders and you do your packing and shipping first thing this morning because you hate it. And if you hate something and you say, I'll do it after lunch, you'll find a reason not to. And then you have a bunch of angry customers and a not successful business. So you're going to have to do that at the beginning, probably because if it's a product you literally need to ship from your location, you probably do not have enough money out of the gate to pay somebody to do it. You need to systematize that shit down to where you can get to the point of hiring a part-time 2-hour-a-day employee as fast as you can. You need to have figured out the numbers in that business that if I was paying myself, what is a reasonable rate for this kind of work? And then you need to figure your employee is going to be at least 20% less efficient than you are, and you need to tighten your SOP up to the point where you can expect them to be as efficient as you are and fire them if they're not anyway. And then you need to transition to a point where somebody else does that thing, but you never lose the knowledge and ability to do it if you lose that person. Even if you only take a week to hire somebody else, you need to be cognizant of this going in. And then how much money can you invest? You need to be honest about that. Because more money does not necessarily mean you will be more successful as an investor. It doesn't mean that. Or I mean, as a business owner, like having a bigger budget to start with does not guarantee success. Sometimes it actually leads to failure. And what I mean by that is, let's say you have so much money you can invest. You go and you start a company, you know, XYZ Inc., and you open a bank account and you clean out, you know, half of one of your 401ks and you throw $100,000 in there. And you say, I can live on a salary of $40,000 a year. It won't be comfortable, but I can. And you start running a payroll out of your business. You're too fucking comfortable. You're too fucking comfortable. I mean, from a logistical standpoint and from a tax advantage standpoint, it's probably the right way to do it, but you're too comfortable. You're like, you don't have a sense of urgency because you're in an employee situation. You're still going to get a check next week, even if the business doesn't produce anything, and you now own the business. You're not holding down a desk chair. That can be bad. But in the other side of it is, there's certain businesses, the cost of entry is hundreds of thousands of dollars. If you can't borrow it or if you don't have it, then that business is not where you want to be. Then you want to find that niche and you want to fold it down into something that fits the budget that you have. Now, I've said that you can start a business with no real money. Let me explain what I mean by no real money. What I mean by that is the amount of money is inconsequential to the aspect of running a business. And what I mean there is you're going to spend $500, $1,000 to put together a decent website. And if you don't know how to build a website, you're going to pay somebody about that much money, or you're going to invest that much time, and you're going to have, in this day and age, at least a basic website, and you should have a good process funnel built into it so that it converts visitors into subscribers, or it converts visitors into paying customers, or it converts visitors into leads or something like that. If you don't have that, you don't have a business, right? So that's a cost. I still consider that almost no real money. You might have to buy a little bit of equipment. When John Dowie started his business, now he's got, I'm sure, tens of thousands of dollars invested now, but he started small in his own house with a microgreen business, for those that don't know who he is. And he went out and bought some plastic shelving and some fans and some stainless steel bowls and some cutting tools and some soil and all. But all in, he probably started out a couple $1,000. And then as he scaled his business up, he invested in more material. I consider that investing almost no real money, right? When you talk about real money in a business startup, if you're not talking tens of thousands of dollars, it's not a lot of money. If you're going to be in a business where, like, I know people literally, Dowie said he started his business with $100. And I don't consider that real money. If it's, you know, that's an amount of money that I spent more than that last night at a restaurant with my wife for our anniversary dinner. And it's a nice restaurant, but it wasn't like super upscale or anything, right? Testing money. That's a good way to put it, Dowie. Sometimes you're productive here. Testing money, right? Was the business even viable? First thing I bet Dowie did, show about how I know my customers, was say, will this shit even work? Like if I do the, because he got a book from a guy named Luke Callahan that was on my show. And he's like, fuck, I could do that shit. That's literally what he said. I know that. And he probably got some trays and some material and said, if I do it, like, can I actually grow it? So then it grew. Okay, there it is. You taste it. It's pretty fucking good. Okay, now can I move it? Well, here, see, this is where Dowie took what he knew already, what he was good at, which is he knew how to talk to people that worked in restaurants, because he worked in restaurants. He knew who to talk to, and he knew when to talk to them. He knew who they were, what did they want, and how did they want it. He knew exactly that information on chefs and at the level of restaurant. He went on the internet for the restaurants he didn't know. He identified the level of restaurant that would qualify for his product. He went to them, meaning the chef, right? He knew exactly what they wanted. He gave them what they wanted for free. He gave them enough product that they could do something with it, right? Not just a little tiny taste, right? Like, here's enough to do something with this week. This is my product. It's better than the shit you're buying that's being shipped in. I grow it right here. You can order weekly from me. I hand deliver right to you, right? And he knew how they wanted it, fresh and packaged properly. By having that, he had the framework to test the business. There's I can do case studies in some of the businesses that have come out of here, and they fit this format perfectly, whether they learned it from me or not, because this is the only format that actually works, right? And then now we know how much money we can invest. How much time can you invest? Like, really, like, I'll work 40 hours on top of my 40-hour job. You probably won't, not for very long, because you still have commuting in between the job and all. I'll steal time at work when they don't know. Okay, yeah, sure, but you still have to be honest. What's the time budget? And then you need to know what your weaknesses are. What do you suck at? What do you suck at? Not just hate, but you just are not good at it. Like I said, people are like, Jack, why don't you do an audio version of your book? Because it won't be my book. It'll be me talking about my book. Because I suck at understanding your customer. Who are they? What do they want? How do they want it? Format, delivery, etc. I'm not good at that. Right? I could do better than that. I'm exaggerating a little bit. But if I keep reading long text, that's what it's going to sound like. And I think part of it is that I can read about 3 times faster than I can talk. I'm not quite a speed reader, but I'm a very quick reader. When I'm sitting reading the Kindle app on my phone, I figured out the exact font size for about the right count, where it's like page, 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 page. I can't talk that fast. So I think the discrepancy, and I'm reading ahead and I'm having to slow down, it just jacks me up. So I know I suck at that. So that tells me, what did I say? If there's going to be an audiobook, I have to find a narrator or train an AI unit in my voice. Because I'm not going to do something I'm bad at when it really matters. Now, I might do something I'm not good at to 2 ends. 1, to get better at it. Or 2, because somebody has to do it until I can afford to pay somebody. Right? But if I'm not good at it, I want to figure out either how to fix my inadequacy, get some training, be taught how to do it better. Okay? Now, how do we fill the gaps? Define then, what do we need to learn? And how should I learn that? Like, if you're in a business, you may not have the time that somebody else does. Oh, Dowie. So what I mean by that is, like, if I want to learn to tie flies, and I'm not going into a business of tying flies, and it takes me 2 years to learn to tie a fly worth of shit, it doesn't really matter, right? But if I'm in the business, and I'm making a very specific fly, and I'm good at flies, I'm good at streamers and whatever, but this particular fly, for whatever reason, it doesn't matter what it is. I'm just throwing something in there because John said fishing, he's got me thinking that way now, right? Then it might behoove me to find the guy that ties that fly beautifully and go pay him to teach me as quickly as possible to do what he's doing. If I'm a knife maker like Patrick Rohrman, it might be worth investing $10,000 with someone who went to learn how to forge steel in Japan to go work with them for 2 weeks in their shop to become much better quicker so I can get a product to market that I can charge a premium for. Where if I'm just a hobbyist knife maker, I'm probably not going to make that investment. Unless I just have a lot of money and I'm an eccentric person. Like my old partner, Neil Franklin, he was the guy that did it. Like he traveled the world studying different martial arts just because he wanted to, and he had a net worth of about $50 million. So he was that eccentric entrepreneur that like, oh, this business is running pretty good and I just started that one and the ops manager knows what they're doing. I'm going to Thailand, right? Like that person will do that, but most people can't until you get to that level anyway. So you need to know what you need to learn and how quickly it needs to be done and what means by which you're going to learn it. You can also come up with a way to fill the gaps as a starter business idea. Do what John did. Now, John eventually, he's doing six figures, man, selling microgreens and chefs and some other stuff. And he stacks in other products now. But it started out as a test, and then it became a side hustle, and then it became a smaller business than it is today, and then it began to expand. So you can slow roll into it, especially if you have a job. Like I think John had gone off managing restaurants and had gone to like just tending bars, because that let him work in the evening and freed up his days when he could like grow his product and talk to chefs until the money equalized and he could walk away from tending bar. That's a way you can bridge a gap. You can take a job to learn, not for income, right? Go work for somebody doing what you want to do. Be careful you're not lifting shit from them and stealing from them, being unethical. But, you know, it might not even be a direct application. You might want to get into becoming a general contractor to build houses. Maybe you want to specialize in something like tiny houses. Again, I'm just freaking throwing an example here. I'm not saying to go into this business, but let's say that's what you wanted to do. But the reason you want to do it is you have a vision of what tiny houses could be. You have a vision of how they could be built faster, quicker, for less money, easily delivered and set up. You have a vision for this. You have a vision for how to market this. You have figured out who your customers are for this product. You have figured out what they want, and you know how they want it delivered. You know all of that. You might have even figured out a way to set up creative financing where they can actually afford it. You've got all of that, and there's one problem you have. You don't know which end of a fucking hammer to use. You have no idea. You've never built shit. The last thing you built was a spice rack in ninth grade wood shop. Take a job framing. Go out to a construction site. I want to work. What do you guys pay hourly to an inexperienced person that will show up on time? You might frame for a month. I know how to frame. You're working with framers, eventually you're going to know how to do rafters. That's actually way more complicated, but you're going to have doing it. Now you know the mathematical way to lay out your pitch and everything for rafters. Now you know how to do that. Okay. You know, you're there as kind of like a helper worker. So they're not going to like need like 17 years of freaking severance notice that you're leaving. Yeah, be nice. Like, hey, man, thank you for the opportunity. I'm going to be here two more weeks and you'll need to get somebody else. Go talk to the drywall company. Learn how to do drywall or paneling or whatever. Go to work for a flooring company. Go to work for a cabinet installer, right? Go do all of the things. Go do some basic plumbing work. Even while you're there doing the framing, watch how the plumbing gets roughed in, right? All of a sudden, you have basic building knowledge. Now you can build your fucking tiny house. That's just one example. That's just one example of how that might work out. Taking a job for what you learn, not your income. Do you know how many times I did that in my life? When I got tired of traveling for sales, and I really did. I was coming home, and my son looked like he grew, you know. And as he got to the teenager, come home, and like he didn't have a mustache when I left. What's the little fuzz going on here, right? And he had this great, you know, basketball game, and I didn't get to see it. And he made this new friend that I didn't know who the hell the person was. And like all, I was like, I'm tired of this shit. And I had been doing a lot of work with web marketing in my sales career. I was doing it for myself. I was being entrepreneurial as a salesperson. I was filling up my speaking seminars when my company couldn't do it. And I'd gotten pretty good at it, but I wasn't great at it. So I went to work for a marketing agency, and I went in, and I was still better than anybody else they interviewed. But I went from making about $180,000 a year to making about $45,000 a year. That's not an easy conversation to have with your wife. Well, you could just, she's like, honestly, couldn't you just go to work for another company and make more money instead of less? And like, yeah, if I would have called up like Vertec or Tronix, they would have hired me in a heartbeat to take over the Southwest for them. I probably could have made a quarter million in that job. I didn't want to do it anymore. I wanted to be better at marketing. I took the job at marketing to be surrounded by marketing people that did nothing but marketing every day so I could be a better marketer. And in less than a year, I ended up going to work for a client and, you know, tripling my income when I did that. And that got me even more experience in marketing large service businesses. And with the agency, I got exposure to all these different businesses that we marketed for. Heavy equipment, we did that, right? And it led to all these little entrepreneurial offshoots. There's the biggest thing that I ever took from Robert Kiyosaki's work in Rich Dad Poor Dad is you take a job for what you can learn, not what you can earn, because the two are related eventually. And the more you learn, the more you can earn. And sometimes you have to take a step back. And when you do that, you start to fill those gaps. You can also do self-study, and there's never been an easier time. Between YouTube University, customized courses that other people put together for you, and utilizing AI like ChatGPT and what have you, there's nothing you can't develop. And here's a great thing you can do with GPT, and this is actually a piece of the course that we're going to be releasing soon. Create a customized learning plan for yourself. I want to learn about this. What are my best books? What are my best podcasts? What are my best, you know, resources? What should I read? Where should I go? And then you can take that information and you could go to another tool, like Notebook LM, drop a lot of that material and have it converted into podcasts and listen to it while you're doing other things. You can actually read that. You can listen to other people's podcasts. You can watch videos demonstrating how to do it. If it's something that has a proficiency component, that's a knowledge versus physical skill, you can then feed all that information back to ChatGPT and say, take all this information, develop me a 50-question quiz on it, and tell me where I'm wrong and where I need to, like, when have you had that available? When has that ever been available that you could do something like that? And all of that shit costs nothing. Now, a paid version of GPT will do a better job for you, but you could do it on a complete shoestring budget. Like, do you realize what John Dowie could have done blowing up his business faster if he had been able to go and develop a marketing plan using GPT back when he started his business over a decade ago? It's not necessarily that he'd be further than he is today. I don't know that he would. I think he's got a pretty big monopoly up there. He's like a mafia guy. Like, them guys are trying to sell greens to my people, you know? Like, you get your fingers broken if you go in the wrong place with John now. Right. But me and my buddy David, we came up with a whole bit for a reality show based on John's business. We were going to call it the Microgreen Mafia. We were creating characters and everything. It would have been fun. But, you know, like, he didn't have that available to him at the time. You have that available to you right now. It's so powerful. And it may be, and more likely, somewhat all of the above. Sticky fingers. That's an inside joke. We're not going to talk about sticky fingers today, but sticky fingers, you better watch out for sticky fingers, right? I've seldom found a person that starts a business that had no jobs that were in some way related to that business. So think about, like, what is Dowie right now? Dowie's a farmer. He's an indoor farmer. He grows a product of microgreens. It almost sounds like he's selling drugs. Like, that's X dollars a gram, right? Like, but he's a farmer. What did he do before this? He ran restaurants. He was a restaurant manager. Farmer, restaurant, no. Food service, and how to talk to food service people. The job was directly related to the business. Even if it's more often that, almost always, there's some level of employment in the past for most people. Unless, you know, you're born into an entrepreneur family, and your dad or your uncle or whatever coaches you into a business right out of the gate, God bless you. But I almost don't think that works. I mean, I've tried. I've tried with my son, tried with my grandson, my granddaughter. They get a little bit entrepreneurial, but I think both of those kids are going to have to work and decide, do I really want this, and transition over. And I think there's a value to working for somebody else as well. By being an employee, you are a better manager of employees when you build a business. That would be another example of what I'm talking about there. All right, let's wrap it up. Why do we do all this? Entrepreneurship creates freedom. That's the number one reason. It's hard, guys. It's not easy. It can get easy in time. Honestly, running this business right now is pretty easy. There are still days where it's hard. There are still days where it's 8 o'clock and I'm still working. But that is the exception, not the rule anymore. We have built enough momentum. We have enough of an audience. I know people are going to tune in. I know people are going to listen. I know people are going to make certain purchasing decisions that are going to benefit. Like, it's much easier than it was. But it's not easy in the beginning. It was hard in the beginning. It's rough. Start out nobody listening to you, right? And you're talking every day, and there's like 15 people listening. It's not easy. And any business is going to have something, some wall that you'll have to break. And so you're going to have to be motivated by something. And doing what you love is a great motivation. But the ability to do what you love and not have to charge for it. In other words, you're not going to take everything you love and put it into your business. Like John said, he loves fishing. I do too. Fishing is not my business. I might be able to write it off or something if I get some content out of it, right? But that's not my business. But because of my business, if I want to go fishing, I make a phone call and a professional takes me to fish for what I want to fish for. Anywhere within 2 hours of my house, I'll go. And I'll get in his boat and we'll have a great day. I have that freedom. I'll also go up the road and fish in a ditch because I still love to do that too. But I have the freedom to do either one of those things. Freedom has got to be the best motivator there is. And if it's not a big motivator for you, I'm going to be honest with you, you're probably better off as an employee. You either want freedom or you want security. And I think we lull ourselves into a false sense of security with a job, right? But there is a level of security with a job if you work for the right company in the right situation with the right skill set. Like, there are certain skill sets too. Like, even if that company folds, like, you could just get another job. Especially like medical industry and stuff like that. My wife was a nurse. I remember she lost a job when she was already done. Like, I don't care. Like, let's just sit down and figure out where you want to work and what you want to be in. And she's like, I want to stay in pediatrics. I don't want to be any further than this in the house. And, you know, since we don't live in Jabip, we're like, okay, well, here's all the doctor's offices. Do you know any of them? Yeah, this person, this person's a dick. Well, don't apply there. I think she put in 3 resumes. You know, after she took about a week off and just didn't worry about it, we pulled her resume. She put in 3 resumes. She had 3 interviews. She went to 3 interviews and she got 3 offers. She picked the one she most wanted to work at based on where it was and who the doctor was. Right? There's people, there's professions like that. You're going to have an opportunity. And if you don't want, if you don't crave freedom, then the pain you must endure to make this happen, it's probably not worth it for you. It's kind of in the light of your dream. Is it your dream to have the freedom? Because you have to take that dream and you have to march it into battle like a commander. Or it's just a wish. It's not really something that can be fulfilled. You have to be driven. Not everyone's going to take this path. If you do, you'll control your life. You'll have something no one can take from you. And this, what we went through today, it's the beginning. So you notice I didn't come out here and say, hey, you could be a dog groomer, or you could be a farmer like Dowie, or you could grow mushrooms, or you could be a fishing guide. Or like, I didn't do any of that. Maybe that's what you thought you were going to get today. But I don't know. I know who you are on the macro as an audience. I can give you a general description of who you are, your age, your demographic, where you live, and the things that are important to you. But I might have someone in here that can look at a piece of marble and see a sculpture. And I might have a person in here that when they look at a rock, they see where it belongs in a landscape. Same material, different people. And I might have some people in here that go, that rock cut into a slab makes a countertop. Same material, different people. And that's just within stone, right? I might have people in here that are like, give me a lathe and some wood and I can make beautiful things with it. And I might have people in here, if you give them a lathe, they'll end up stabbing themselves in the face. And then no matter how much training they get, they don't belong. I can't tell you what your business is. I'm not going to tell you to go start a dog grooming business if you don't like dogs. Or if you're afraid of dogs. Or if you're allergic to dogs. But a dog grooming business can be very lucrative. I know a lady from past business exposure who, pretty good salesperson, honestly. Pretty successful in the business world. Hated it. Loved dogs. In her spare time, when she had a job, she was part of an organization that literally stole dogs out of abusive situations. Well, like the cops won't do anything. The dog's being abused. The person won't take care of the dog. The dog's going to either kill somebody or end up dead itself. They literally went in like gorillas and stole the dog. that's, I'm not saying if that's right or wrong, I'm just telling you that's what she did. That's how dedicated this lady, her name was Kathy, she's from New Jersey, was to dogs. She started a dog walking and pet sitting business. I'm like, oh, that's cute. And I knew her old man made pretty good money, so I'm like, yeah, I'll work out. Maybe, you know, make some. So about 2 years in, I'm like, well, how are you doing? She goes, well, I made $80,000 last year, and I think I'm going to grow by about 40 this year. She figured out that the people, you didn't want to like take care of the dog for the person like me that needed you to do it, you know, once a year or something when he was on vacation. No, no, no. You wanted yuppies, right? Or whatever the modern equivalent of a fucking yuppie is, right? You wanted really rich people that treated their dogs like their kids. And she was just this bubbly person that the dogs would instantly fall in love with. And the person was like, Fufu is so happy when Kathy is here. They pay lots of money. She ended up marketing through veterinarians. She found the veterinarians that served the neighborhoods of the rich people, mostly women who shopped for a living. She targeted that market. She knew who they were, what they wanted, how they wanted it. See, it's this. See what I'm saying? It's the same freaking thing over and over and over. I'm this ChatGPT course that we're going to be doing. I talked to my nephew about that. I said, I'll guarantee you a seat in it if you want to take it. He goes, yeah, I kind of do. But we're in such a different business than all the other people in your world. His wife's an Instagram model. Yeah. And I'm like, business is business. Business is business. Who are they? What do they want? How do they want it? So on that point, I do want to talk a little bit about the GPT course with you guys today. It is really become something amazing, in my opinion, that we've built. If you were listening to a lot of what I was saying today about like developing SOPs and repeatable procedures and being able to scale your business, and you're like, man, that's great, Jack, but I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know how I'm ever going to do that. What this course is designed to do over 40 days is to help you do that and more, to develop things like a lead magnet, right? That converts visitors into leads or into buyers, that upsells people after they become a lead, that automatically contacts them. Now, there's things you'll have to add in to make that happen, like an email service or what have you, right? Like, it's not going to teach you how to do web design, but it'll teach you how to do web content. You can always pay somebody to do design. But it's also going to enable you to, one, become more expert at what you do, to repackage your content, use it multiple times in multiple ways, to become a more effective communicator, to be better at customer service, to end up figuring out how to figure out exactly what customer service issues you're going to have the most of and get tight on how to handle them, what to say and how to say it, to even when the inquiry requires some personal response, to have a pre-designed prompt to go to GPT and say, you know, this is our policy. This is the customer's question. I can't say yes. How do I say no in a way that will make sense to this customer and get a response for that? You're going to learn how to get content out of GPT and assess it and then say, I don't like these things, change it. And after you think it's good, make GPT reassess itself. You're going to learn how to take a marketing plan that you think is perfect and give a command that's basically, now break it. Find its weaknesses and tighten that up. All of that in 40 days. And I want to lay out the process flow of how this is going to work. Every day, you'll be in a private Telegram group. There's only 100 people getting in the first round, by the way. And we have more than that already pre-registered. So you should pre-register, because basically the day we're ready to start taking payments, we're going to send an email to that list and we're going to wait a day. And if we don't sell out, then we'll tell everybody else you can get a shot at it. That ain't going to happen, guys, right? You know, when I do things like this, how they sell out. So you'll get on your Telegram list and there'll be a video that morning. It'll be for me. This is what you're going to learn today, and this is what to be prepared for. And then you're going to get a small Word document. You're going to take that, open it up, and you're going to cut it and paste it into your student manual, because I don't want you working ahead here. I want everybody on the same path at the same timeline. You're going to drop that into your manual, and you're going to do what it says. You're going to report back with your results to your fellow students and to me, your instructor, from a marketing standpoint, and Tom, who will be your instructor from a technology standpoint. We'll both be there and answering questions. Maybe not in real time, but we will scroll through. And that's why we'll have like 100 people going at a time. If you want, you can share all your results that day. Make a document and let people read it. at the end of the day, we'll look at all of the things where people were stuck, and I'll do a wrap-up video at the end of the day. These are going to be 3 to 5 minute videos, not stuff like this. Hey, you understand you have some troubles with this and this and this, and this is what to do, and this is what to be prepared for tomorrow, and so on every day. And then when you get to the end of your Friday, you have the weekend to get caught up on anything you didn't do. By the end of this, you'll have a complete systemized process for a business. If you don't have a business yet, you will be able to fabricate in your head a potential business, partially go through what we talked about today as you're doing this, and come out the end of it with a program and plan for a business that doesn't even exist yet, which might actually be better. There's certain things you've done when you already own a business you're kind of locked into. The person just getting ready to start, I would say this, though. You need to take some time and figure out kind of what you want to do and come in with that knowledge. And if you do that and you follow the prompts and you follow the instruction and you work with the other students, and you're going to learn other things too. Because another thing you're going to be learning is how I do this every day. Because every day I'm going to take all the work I did for the show, not for the course, spin that into a PDF from my conversations, what I did, and give that to the students as well. And I don't know where you're going to get anything else like this. I really don't. Because I'm not an AI guy that used AI to create a course on how to do a business, but doesn't actually know how to build a business. Except how my business is selling AI shit, right? Like, that's not me. I'm a guy who's built businesses, product businesses, service businesses, built a multi-six-figure podcast, starting with a $18 freaking Plantronics recorder, right? I mean, really. And I've also helped build a business with 2,500 contractors all over the world. I helped build a business that was built on AI algorithms before anybody even was really talking about AI in Syrian information services, where we were actually doing an analysis for like T-Mobile, AT&T, and Verizon. Right. I've built businesses in all these different places, little businesses, big businesses, successful ones, failures. And I figured out how to use AI. So I took my process and had AI systematize my process. If you want in on this course, I'm telling you right now, you need to get over and you need to read this little write-up here and click the link, and you'll go to a page at jackslaws.com and you need to fill out that form. It's name and email. If you do not do that, I am telling you right now, you are not going to be in the first round of this course, and we are probably going to double the price in the second round. Because, man, a lot of work has gone. I can't tell you how much work has gone into this. This is not about making GPT into a genie that answers questions. It's about learning to do the work. And I want to put one warning on this. If you think that this course is going to work like this, cut, paste, okay, output, cut, paste, output, okay, yay, it's not. There's going to be days that you're going to be doing the thing you hate. Because you're doing it, even if you end up loving it, you're going to hate it when you do it the first time. There's going to be days you're like, this is going to be kind of hard today. And did you think it was easy to build a business from nothing or to take a small business and blow it up? It's simple, but it's not easy. You're going to have to dig on some days. Some days you're going to like, this was fun, and it was kind of like I learned a thing or two and it was great. There's going to be days you're going, man. And I tried to build a flow through it. So like after a really intense week, it's kind of a little bit more laid back week and then another intense week. And then I'm going to drop something at the end of it that's going to help you turn on a content production machine. So like all businesses should have a blog, and you go to their blog and the last thing they posted was like 2017, and it leads off with, I know I haven't posted in a long time. But you'll end up with that bonus actually structuring for you a 60-day cycle of producing content that you won't be able to fail at, that will be relevant, yummy keywords, call to action, all of it. Like if you want to – like I can't tell you how many people, I want you to be my business mentor. I hate doing that. This is as close as you're going to get, and it's going to be awesome. All right. Again, thank you to everybody who helped make Laws of Life such a splash yesterday of success, coming in and getting onto all those bestseller lists. If you haven't picked up a copy yet, or even if you have, consider picking up another copy for someone that could use this information, that could use this way of looking at things, that maybe is a little stuck at some point in their life, but they're ready for a change. Maybe they're not ready to listen to a podcast, but maybe they'll read a book because you cared enough to give them one. And again, soft copy in Kindle or the hard copy book, both work. If you want to help me the most, help me earn a little on the back end and go through the link at thesurvivalpodcast.com. Do your purchase on Amazon. That way I'm making money as the author and I'm making money as the affiliate at the same time. With that, guys, again, thanks for tuning in. Let's take a couple questions and we'll wrap up here. Christopher says, business idea, word of mouth barbecue catering, no affiliation with a kitchen, just cook and sell meat per pound, no serving, just instructions to serve. So I'm not sure exactly what he means, but it sounds like you're cooking the food and you're like, here it is by the pound. I think that's a fantastic idea, actually, Chris, and I'll tell you why. We have a barbecue place in Texas, a chain, and it's decent, right? It's like good, and if you don't know real Texas pit barbecue, you think it's excellent. It's okay, right? But it's fine for you have a bunch of people coming over you don't want to cook, and you get a couple pounds of brisket, a couple pounds of black pepper sausage or something like that. Do you know what they're charging for freaking brisket now, cooked brisket? $28 a fucking pound. I think there's room in there to do better and sell for a little bit less and make a healthy margin. So I think that would be a cool business, right? If you love doing it. The new old man question, I'm starting a plumbing company soon. I'm worried about call volume. What do you think about doing non-plumbing services, junk removal, DoorDash, etc.? Good or just a distraction? I don't know. You'll have to analyze that for me. So if you say you're worried about call volume, what it means to me, based on the way you just phrased it, is I'm worried that the phone won't ring to get me enough work, right? So since you're saying that, what you're basically saying is I'm afraid that I won't have enough business. You would probably do better to focus on marketing the core business harder so that if there's a problem with call volume, it's that you start having to refer business to friendly competitors because you can't cover it all. You would probably do, but, you know, junk removal, there's money in that. You have equipment. You need to do something with your time if you're capitalizing on it. As in, hey, I'll take your junk to the dump, but we're really a plumbing company. Here's my card. Do you know anybody that needs plumbing services? We're a little slow right now. We're just getting started. You know, maybe you can turn it. DoorDash, I mean, the beauty of DoorDash is it's like an on-demand side hustle. And what I mean by that is you turn it on when you're not doing anything else anyway. It can be very lucrative, and I've talked to people that make a lot of money doing it, and I've talked to people that don't make shit doing it. You got to figure out, like, for yourself. I really can't answer that. That's my guidance, though. American legend, fold it down to fit my budget. Does that mean scale back and focus on my core competencies? Maybe. It means exactly what I said. It means you need to figure out the budget you have and what you can do with the budget you have, and you need to make it work. That's what it means. There's really no way around that. Like, you only have what you have. You can either expand the budget or contract the expenditure. There's nothing else you can do. Farmer Cheryl, what prompt can one use together with all the different composting methods posted on YouTube, including a 14 and 18 day methods? I don't know. I'm not sure what you're asking. Prompt. I think maybe you're asking about learning, creating a learning program for composting. Is that when this question came in? If you want to restate that real quick, if you're still here, I'll see what I can do, but I really don't know what you're asking. Smelling Error says, question for Jack, what about health insurance? It's expensive. You need to factor it into your budget. By the time you walk away from your job, if your job's currently paying for your health insurance, you need to know what it's going to cost you. You need to shop around and see what it's going to cost. And you should look at things like health share programs and stuff like that that save a lot of money, especially for young people that don't really need super comprehensive insurances. And those health share programs do qualify under requirements. And then the other thing to understand is if you are self-employed and you structure things the right way with your accountant, your health insurance is 100% deductible. If you do it the wrong way, it's not. So make sure, depending on where you live and your type of business, that you have that conversation because it's a huge expense. So it's also a huge deduction, right? It's a huge deduction, right? And I'm looking now. I don't see any follow-up on that. Christopher says, barbecue is expensive. Yes, it's very expensive. But if you can make it a little less than your competitor and a lot better tasting, how much business can you have? And then you just need to market effectively. And that's what I'll end with. Like, guys, the reason I did the GPT course the way I did, it's designed for the business operations and marketing. And this is the two things that most people fail at. You put up a sign, you get enough business to survive, and you think you're being successful. You have no idea how much money you're leaving on the table. And then you're always running around, and you're never getting things into a system. You know you should. You know you should have an employee handbook and manual. Like, in the end, nobody will read it. Yeah, they might if you tell them they have to or they're fired. Or if you tell them if you don't do it the way that it's here in the SOP, you're fired, then they'll probably actually do it. And believe it or not, when you hire most people, they actually want to do good. And if you tell them exactly how to do something, they'll do it the way that you teach them to do it. Usually when you have an employee that does things wrong, it's not their fault. It's improper training. It's improper systems. It's improper procedure. And businesses need procedures. This is why some people think I'm a dick. I want to be on the show, Jack. Yeah, sure. No problem. Fill out the guest form. I don't want to. Can't we just set a time right now? That's how everybody else does it. Go be on somebody else's show. I have a reason that we do the guest form. Number one, that's my first look at you as a prospective guest. Even if you've been on the show, like, what are you pitching me for this episode? What do you want to, well, whatever you want. That's, bye. I'm booked out right now to almost fucking August, man. I don't have time for your bullshit. Pitch me. That way I know what we're talking about. You know what we're talking about. But I also want things like, I want something that goes to my wife. That's what the form does. It goes to my wife. She looks at the calendar. I don't touch the calendar. She updates my Google calendar. It tells me what I'm doing, right? And I'll get to you, Cheryl. I see it now. Okay. That calendar tells me when I'm interviewing who. And it's not just that. It's like my guest appearances. She runs my calendar and she runs my guest booking. I don't touch it. Without the form, what do I send her? Your email saying anytime, anything? No. She's going to kick that back. If you email her that, she's like, delete. She knows. I don't play that way. But what else happens? I've got a bio. I'm not saying something about you that's not true. I'm not cutting and pasting something off the internet that I think you wrote that somebody wrote about you. I've got that. I've got your links to your website. Or not, depending on what you want. I've got everything I need to put together show notes that give you a good guest appearance. That's a procedure in our business. How many small businesses don't have procedures like that? Almost all of them. Why do you have a podcast that makes a full-time living for a guy for almost two decades now? Procedures, processes, documentation. Like, you come into my office, you're like, this is the most disorganized fucking asshole on the planet. He's got shit everywhere. What is this crap? Yeah, but not my business, not my processes, not my procedures. They're tight. That's why the show is packaged the way that it is, but it's done so with an intention so that it doesn't come off like some Hollywood bullshit, right? That's why I'm sitting here with a freaking $10, you know, Agoras flag behind me and an old computer monitor off to the side and what have you, you know? Because it's more important that the process is right than like polishing it. I think we would lose something if we polish it. It's just not me. And the show has to be me. Somebody else might have it really polished and it works for them. That's okay too. All right. Again, with that, I appreciate it. Let me see real quick what Farmer Cheryl said. I want a list of all the composting methods using on YouTube, including Johnson, Sue, Bokashi, et cetera. Including what channel posted it, process used, et cetera, using ChatGPT, what prompt can give me this info. You pretty much just wrote it for yourself. Because here's what you're going to need to learn about GPT, and you'll learn it in the course, by the way, if you want a business. You'll have to develop the prompt as you're using the prompt. Even if I gave you a prompt, it might not give you what you want. So you have to give it a shot. Tell it what you want to do and ask it to help you develop a prompt. And when you finally get the result you want, this is what I always do. It's frustrating. It's frustrating. It's better. It's still fun. It's not what I want. It's not. I finally got it. And I feel like my initial prompt should have gotten me the result right away. I asked GPT, rewrite my initial prompt, cut and paste in, so that we can get to this result from the beginning in the future. And it rewrites it. And I cut that out and I put it in a Word document. I have a whole document of different categories of prompts that are for me in my business. Like how I want my bullet points output. If you do it more than once, there should be a system in place for it. Right? So That's what you would do, Cheryl. Let's start out with that. Just tell it to literally take what you just wrote to me and ask AI to do that for you and say, how do we do this? Right? You might start by saying, please list all the composting methods with a short description of what they are. So this is how I would engineer. You're basically engineering your own prompt library. And, you know, it'll give you Johnson Soup, Bokashi, Static Pot, all of them. And you're going to look through them and you're going to go, there's a couple of these I just don't care about. Or what are those? Right? And dig deeper. So just list it and then a two-sentence description of what it is and what's unique about it. And then you can say, okay, now find them for me. Find me the best videos to watch on Johnson Soup. Find me the best videos to watch on Bokashi. And whatever other resources you want. And that'll curate you a list that way. That'll probably be more effective than trying to give one master prompt. And that way you'll end up with a categorized list. And then you could say, based on what you know about these videos, what is the most logical order for me to take them in? Where should I start? So like take all the Johnson Soup ones as a group and move them maybe down below high turn, right? Or whatever else there is. And then start progressing through that. The one thing I'll tell you is that AI can't really take in videos the way that it can text. Yes, there's things that put out a transcript or whatever, but from a blanket search that way, I don't know what your results will be until you try. I'd actually like to hear from you what your results have been, Cheryl, if you want to send me an email once you give that a shot. I'd like to know. In fact, that would be kind of cool if you would then, when you're done with your chat, if you're happy with it, make a document out of it, share it with the community. Because this is how we're going to learn, even if that's not what I want. The process that resulted in the output, now I can engineer that process for the output that I'm looking for. All right. Again, thanks to everyone that tuned in today. Have a great day and make it productive. And it, again, just one more impetus. Yes, this is not for everyone. But yes, nothing will give you more freedom, more liberty, more self-sufficiency, more independence, and more control over your own lifestyle design than a successful business. Take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow. We have a great interview that will nest well into these week's two shows. Matt Sersley from the Expert Council will be on, and we'll be talking about a lot of things that are business involved from a tax advantage strategy and from a finance strategy and from a legalistic strategy. So with that, I'll catch you guys tomorrow.
You should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.